Welcome everybody to Sans. This is episode 27. I'm Jared Reimer, and I'm your host of the program. I hope that each and every one of you is doing well for today. And the recording day is going to be the 24th. And this is Sans News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information, security, training, certification, and research. November 21st, 2025, Volume 27, Number 86. As I write on the first page of our notes, this is Sans Episode 27, as I introduced. On this episode, we want to make it known that we will try to keep things clean, but sometimes it can't be helped. We've gone through 26 episodes without saying one bomb, but it may be time for us to go ahead and change that. And we'll see how it goes. I write, but it may be time to just see how it goes. And I do want to let everybody know we will try our best, because there are some things that just piss you off, and maybe it's just better to let loose than just try and hold it in and think of other words to replace words you really want to say. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the majority of my listeners are adults. If not, well, just be aware that there is a chance that this could entail some words. Not every time, but some. The goal is to keep it as clean as possible. If you're reading this on the computer, you will find the notes containing Sans itself, including all of the editor's comments. If you have the Braille file and you want one, we are using computer Braille code where it makes sense. And note, this will be used for file names or computer commands that might be mentioned, and in this one, there really isn't anything that I needed to put in computer Braille code except for email addresses for me, and at the end for Sans. Things may not be perfect, but we're working on the bugs with software that produces the Braille. And of course, if you want a Braille copy, please email tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menv.org, and mention whether you want English American Braille Edition or Unified English Braille. Also mention if you want a 30 or 40 cell file. Before we get into the table of contents, there's something that we need to discuss a little bit about. And I neglected to do this when we were talking last podcast in the last newsletter about farming. This is actually spelled P-H-A-R-M-I-N-G. And it's not to be confused with farming, which is F-A-R-M-I-N-G, as he's doing farming today, as in going into the fields and picking corn or apples or grapes or any other thing that farming entails. Farming is a type of a cyber attack intended to redirect a website and all of its traffic to another, which may end up being a fake website. By installing a malicious program on a victim's computer to gain access to it. I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but we do know that you can change a file called hosts. I don't know where it's actually located, but there is a host file that Windows can use to block or redirect or do things with. So you could either change the host's file, or by exploitation of a vulnerability in a DNS server or its related software, these computers are out there to resolve names such as menvi.org or jaredreimer.net into IPs to where they go. These are known as IP addresses. Compromised servers are sometimes referred to as poisoned. Farming requires unprotected access to target a computer, such as altering a computer other than a business server. Although I don't know if that's 100% true, they did say citation needed on Wikipedia. The term farming is a neologism based on the word farming and phishing. And they describe phishing, which is a type of social engineering attack to obtain access credentials or other personally identifiable information on others and or your business. We will put farming, pharming, in the terms over at emailhostsecurity.net. That's emailhostsecurity.net. Note for the reader, the transcription is done by me, Jared Reimer, with the software Braille 2000. I think this is a great translation. I only found one small mistake on this first page where I just corrected it myself on this copy, but I'll probably reissue the file if I'm asked for a new one by anybody. You can email tech, tech@menvi.org to do that. Before I send you the file, I'll make the correction and regenerate a new copy. I think I'm pretty happy with the way this went this time. We have quite a bit, and I believe I may have two morons of the podcast. And again, I'm going to try and keep this as clean as I can, but I want to let you know that I think it's time for us to just let loose. We're all adults. We've all heard the words before. I know that the provider is really picky on, well, not particularly picky, because we do have a disclaimer that we put on the security box, but they want to know if it's appropriate for children. I say this podcast is. If there's a word or two, I'm not going to worry about it. But I haven't gotten any complaints yet, so if something changes and we need to change, we'll do that. Here's the table of contents for this program. The top of the news has items which are three in nature, and the rest of the news has six, seven, eight in nature. Cloudflare outage not due to cyber attack, but highlights security concerns, and I agree. I sent this one to the list, and I know there's a bunch of blogging I need to do, so hopefully I'll be able to get to some of that. Another Fortinet 40 web vulnerability disclosed and added to known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. Maybe this could be one of several complete morons of the podcast. You let me know. You know, it's been such a long time since we've heard about PowerSchool, and this last item in the top of the news covers just that, because it's titled Canadian Provincial Police, privacy, and it wouldn't surprise me, by the way, if the police were involved in dealing with some of these issues, but it's actually Canadian Provincial Privacy Commissioners say schools share some of the blame for PowerSchool data breach. So, that there may be two right there in the top of the news section of this program, which I am taping on Monday, and this was for Friday's newsletter this past Friday. Here's the rest of the week's news. SolarWinds releases updates for vulnerabilities in ServU and observability self-hosted. Of course, SolarWinds was one of the biggest breaches in its day, so it's not surprising that they're back in the news, but if they're back to let us know that they're patching things, I think that's a good thing. Oh boy. Maybe there's another moron of the podcast when it comes here to Salesforce. The title here is Salesforce Discloses Data Breach in Gainsight Apps. Not necessarily Salesforce, but another app that uses Salesforce as a connection point somewhere. Never heard of Gainsight before. Researchers urge railway signaling security overhaul. EU financial regulators designate tech providers as critical infrastructure. Microsoft outlines security risks of Windows agentic AI features. Like, they have any rules and room to talk. Their software's so buggy, we can't even trust them on keeping us as secure as possible. CISA and international partners publish bulletproof hosting provider risk mitigations. Well, I guess that's a good start. By the way, that's the last item in the table of contents in what we'll be covering today. By the way, besides the email address I gave above, since now we're on page one of our file, let me stop and give you some other contact info that might be of value to you. You can email or iMessage tech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. I said that when you could get the Braille. I want it by email because that's the only way I can get that to you is by email. Now, if you want to iMessage, you can do that too, using the same address. If you don't have iMessage and you want to text, use 804-442-6975. You can also call me on that number. Or if you want to leave a voicemail on the voicemail line, which at the moment is calling me, but if it's not calling me, you can definitely leave a message on the comment line at 888-405-7524. All right, folks. All right. Let's go ahead and get started with top of the news on page one. Cloudflare outage not due to cyber attack, but highlights security concerns. Starting at 11:28 UTC on November 18th, 2025, websites, services, online platforms, and even critical infrastructure systems supported by Cloudflare's global network experienced a widespread outage, which Cloudflare has since traced to an internal error, stating the issue was not caused directly or indirectly by a cyber attack or malicious activity on any of any kind. While initial 5XX error HTTP status codes led to speculation about a hyperscale distributed denial of service DDoS attack, Cloudflare identified within 3 hours of the incident that the ultimate cause was actually a routine database permissions change. A module that manages bot access to Cloudflare customer sites receives an updated configuration file every few minutes generated by a database. An adjustment to database access permissions inadvertently generated this configuration file at twice the expected size, causing the bot management module to crash throughout the Cloudflare network. By 14:30 UTC, Cloudflare deployed a corrected configuration file, and by 1706, all downstream services were restarted and all operations fully restored. Brian Krebs writes that the challenge of pivoting away from Cloudflare during this incident might be considered, in the words of Nicole Scott, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Replica Cyber, a free tabletop exercise, whether you meant to run one or not. Krebs also cites Ian's research faculty member Aaron Turner's concerns. Many companies have essentially relied on Cloudflare for the OWASP top 10 web application vulnerabilities and a whole range of blocking. How much badness could have happened in that window? Any organization that made that decision needs to look closely at any exposed infrastructure to see if they have someone persisting after they've switched back to Cloudflare protections. Lots of comments by the editors here. They explain it better than I can. And I'll tell you what, though. The fact that they got this solved in 3 hours by replacing the file, and then it, of course, taking its time to propagate across the network, is phenomenal. This can happen to anybody. The fact that, you know, this wasn't a huge problem where a cyber attack was to actually blame is good. But I also think relying on one basket to handle all your web traffic could be a problem. I mean, it's no different than me being hosted where I am and something goes down, whether it's a power outage. The last time we went down, it was a hardware failure. You know, a hard drive goes bad. You know, all kinds of things. So, and those types of things can actually happen to anybody. Whether you want them to or not. We really don't have a choice in the matter. We get what we get, and that is sort of it. I know that Krebs on Security was under Cloudflare until his site took such a hit that Cloudflare or any other company could have said, you know, we love you, but this is now affecting our other customers, and now it's starting to become a problem. And at that particular time, they nullified the website to make it to where it was unresponsive. And Brian went to a different company. But that could happen to anybody, too. So whether it's a cyber attack or a mistake, the fact that they are up front gives them a cheer. Because you want a company to tell us what's happening. This is exactly what you want. I wouldn't want it any other way. Good job, Cloudflare, for being up front and telling us what you knew, when you knew it, and keeping us informed. We can't ask for anything better than that. All right, folks. I think it's time for Fortinet to become our first moron of the podcast. Now, you're probably sitting there going, well, why? Well, when you're about to hear what you're about to hear, like when I read this while putting the Braille together, your first thought was, or should be, holy crap. And then your second thought should more than likely be, how the fuck is this company staying in business with this many vulnerabilities? And yes, this is what I'm thinking. I could have said, how the hell? Or, you know, how can this company? But I think it's time we open up the words, because some people think that way. And I'm not just going to keep it quiet any longer. As I said, if I need to put a disclaimer on the program, I can do that or mark it so that people under a certain age can't get at the program. But, you know, these words are used all the time, and it's time that we open up the lid. And if that's the way you think, then you've come across this podcast and you know exactly what I'm thinking, because you'll find out. The article, or this next item anyway, is called Another Fortinet 40 Web Vulnerability Disclosed and Added to Known Exploited Vulnerabilities Catalog. And by the way, if you have a copy of the Braille file, we're actually on page 3. Fortinet has disclosed and patched a second actively exploited vulnerability in 40 Web in less than a week. And by the way, this is FortiWeb. The F is capital, and the W is capital. Fortinet disclosed the high-severity OS command injection vulnerability, CVE-2025-58034, on Tuesday, November 18th. So 3 days before this newsletter was published. This vulnerability, like the Fortinet 40 web flaw disclosed on November 14th, CVE 2025-64446. That is 64446. Has been added to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA's, known exploited vulnerabilities KEV catalog, and, like the other vulnerability, Federal Civilian Executive Branch, FCEB, agencies have 1 week to mitigate the flaw. This one must be fixed by Tuesday, November 25th. As I said, I'm recording this on the 24th. We'll get it out either late on the 24th or on the 25th. Folks, this is bad. This is bad. If this doesn't earn the moron of the podcast, or what TSB actually calls the stupid fuck award, then I don't know what does. And we're gonna get into some things in the comments, which I'm gonna read here in a minute, that might make you go, Neely writes, CVE 2025-58034, improper neutralization of command elements, aka input sanitizing, has a CVSS score of 7.2. Now that's not awful. That's better than your 8, 9s, and 10s. You really don't want it in the 9s or 10s. Remarkably, he writes, this flaw was also fixed in 8.0.2. The same 8.0.2 we talked about in podcast 26. Yes, I know we should be well ahead of where we are now, but I've been down for a few months, and we're just going to move forward with what we have, folks. I'm not going to go backwards and try and tape all of these other things. He writes, so if you applied the update, you're good. Even so, be prepared for increased probing for vulnerable devices. Dukes also writes, it's now 209 vulnerabilities in Fortinet products. See SANS News Bites, Volume 27, Number 85, a.k.a. Last Podcast. This is 86. They're now referencing 85. Which talked about this. Organizations shouldn't wait for entry onto the KEV catalog before patching. There's ample evidence to visit the Fortinet software update library on a frequent basis for updates. All right, folks. So, as I write, note that this was just released on podcast 26 of this series, and I'm talking about number 85. I don't believe Fortinet has transparency here, as this is the 209th vulnerability already, as Duke said. What could possibly go wrong? Holy crap, folks. Even during my illness, Fortinet was talked about with bunches of patches across their software and hardware or whatever systems they run. Even when I started this SANS series, Fortinet was talked about. This is bad. When a company has been mentioned so often that your editors of your newsletter can count that this is number 209? We've been covering some of this on TSB, otherwise known as the Security Box. This is just unconscionable, I think is the word I want to use. I don't quite get what's going on over there at Fortinet. Maybe they need to change their water supply and do what I've done. Order cases of water, like flavored water, or if you're not into flavored water, purified water. That might be better, because we know today's water is awful, and I'm not saying that it could make you do things that you really don't want to do, but I've tasted some of the water coming out of the tap these days, and that's not necessarily for me, which is why I buy flavored water, and I'm looking to try a different type of flavored water, and maybe I'll change it up altogether. I mean, even if you get the regular water, I'd get the purified water, and get them in bottles. Get the purified water, get them in bottles, get a brand that you like. Maybe there's something in their water that they're just making mistakes. And these are huge mistakes. I don't quite get this one. So, this is the first of the complete idiots of the week. Let's go ahead and move along now to our next item. Canadian provincial privacy commissioners say schools share some of the blame for PowerSchool data breach. Canadian provincial governments in Ontario, Alberta, and Alberta have independently published reports on the power school breach that has affected school systems, share responsibility for the lost data of the EdTech company. According to the Provincial Information Commissioner's reports, the school systems should have included privacy and security provisions in their contracts with PowerSchool and should have taken steps to ensure that PowerSchool was employing robust security measures such as limiting remote access to school data and requiring multi-factor authentication, MFA. The reports also found that the school systems did not have effective breach response plans in place, and that some of the school systems retained data going back several decades. The perpetrator of the December 2024 breach was able to access PowerSchool systems because the company had not enabled MFA. The breach resulted in the exfiltration of data belonging to 62 million students and 9 million educators. When the tech blog published PowerSchool's news, we were wondering what was going on, I write. It seemed to those participating on the podcast of TSB that this was the case where no security was in place. This confirms it. Make sure you read the editor comments from within the newsletter, especially if you were part of this breach, and contact your school who notified you and ask about the responsibility of data or lack thereof. And I'll tell you what, while you're at it, why don't you ask them if they still are contracted through PowerSchool? And also, while you're at it, why don't you ask them what PowerSchool's doing if their answer is yes? You can search PowerSchool with or without capitalization. I don't think that much matters. P-O-W-E-R, school, one word. It's either going to be one word or two words. I may have done it both ways, so make sure you do it both ways to make sure you get both sets of coverage, even if you get duplicates. Because sometimes, without me reading it in Braille or looking at it, I may have done some of this coverage is in two words. Now, if this isn't a complete moron, then I don't know what is. And I believe that we gave PowerSchool a stupid fuck award back during those particular podcasts. If you need copies of those podcasts, I can provide them to you. Give me the podcast numbers, and I will be more than happy to get you links to them. This is beyond repair, and I agree with the comments that were made in the newsletter that it's time for Power School to own up, as well as the school systems who relied on it as well. Security is a two-way street. There's no way around that. Find this podcast of value? Want to donate? Go to my website at jaredrimer.net to learn more on how you can do that. This podcast is commercial free and sponsored by the Jared Reimer Network. We are not putting ads in this podcast because we want to get the news and commentary to you straight out of the horse's mouth, and we're not interested in advertising on this podcast. Email, iMessage, tech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp, 804-442-6975. Or find the comment line at 888-405-7524. If you can talk to me, great. If not, leave a message, and I can call you back as soon as possible. If you want to text or send a WhatsApp message, 804-442-6975. So, feel free to donate or contact me. Even just to say hi would be great. And let me know you're listening to the Sands podcast through the Jared Reimer Network. Sands also has other podcasts out there, which they run. This particular podcast was my idea, covering the news where I read their newsletter and I comment on them, and we do make it very clear where we take their editorial team's comments. So, I'm also providing links to the newsletter in our show notes, which you can find through RSS. And yes, I know, I need to get at the blog and start blogging this stuff, because I've been neglecting said blog. Oh boy. Alright, folks. If you're following along in the Braille, you'll notice that I started putting the rest of the week's news on a separate page so you know where top of the news ends and we start with the rest of the news. So, if you're on the 40-cell file, whether you're on a UEB copy you've requested or the eBay copy, which I've read from, and I will be making some corrections to it because I found some errors in one of the comments section, and I think I know how I want to rewrite it, so I will be releasing a new file, but regardless of that, you will find me on page 6, and it may be a little different on the UEB side, but I'm not going to be completely sure, because UEB, I don't have a current copy of, and we do know that things can change in that realm between the two languages. Well, we do know about the SolarWinds breach, that huge breach. Wasn't it in like 2021, you know, during the pandemic, where they practically were taken advantage of through their FTP clients and other clients, and they practically had their heads on fire? Well, I don't think it's this bad this time, but SolarWinds tops off the rest of the news with they're releasing, the title is SolarWinds Releases Updates for Vulnerabilities in ServeU and Observability Self-Hosted. And ServeU was that big FTP client. On Tuesday, November 18th, SolarWinds published advisories for 5 vulnerabilities in their products. 3 critical flaws in SolarWinds ServeU and 2 medium severity flaws in SolarWinds Observability Self-Hosted. The ServeU vulnerabilities are a logic error issue, CVE 2025-40547, a missing validation process, CVE 2025-40548, and a path restriction bypass vulnerability, CVE 2025-40549, all of which an attacker with admin privileges could exploit to execute code. Of course, these are all CVEs in order, and all are bad. The vulnerabilities in SolarWinds Observability Self-Hosted are a cross-site scripting flaw, CVE 2025-26391, and if that's not bad enough, although I wish I would have written that, but I'm taking directly from their writing, so I can't add to what they already wrote. So they write, and an SQL injection flaw, CVE 2025-40545. So they've got 40545, 547, 8, and 9, as well as 26, what was this? 26391, which probably was some months back, but I'm not completely sure. You don't want any of these things lurking around your network. If there are patches, see if you can find them. I write, I know it's harder than it sounds. Hopefully someone can help you. And Neely writes and perfectly writes this. He says, ServeU is a file transfer platform, which is already going to be a target. Don't wait for a good time to address these. The good news is the flaws are fixed in 15.5.3. Get it done. Okay. That's not so bad. They fixed it. They're getting the news out. They're not saying, this isn't happening. We're good here. I'm happy to see that they're now taking responsibility for the stupidity that they showed during the pandemic with, we don't know what's going on, we fixed this, you know, or we don't, you know, understand, or whatever excuses they were coming up with through the pandemic as to why they weren't really interested in doing anything. And even if they did do something, it led to more problems and oh boy, was it bad during that time. It may not be bad now. Maybe they learned their lesson. But some people still haven't learned their lesson. Let's go ahead and move along now to Salesforce. Like, we haven't had enough problems with them with their breaches or lack thereof. This one is Salesforce discloses data breach in Gainsight apps Salesforce. Or Gainsight apps. I pasted this twice. Alright. Fair enough. On November 19th, 2025, Salesforce published a security advisory disclosing a data breach that took place via applications published by third-party business software company Gainsight, connected to Salesforce, and installed and managed directly by customers. Salesforce immediately revoked all active access and refresh tokens for connected Gainsight applications and also temporarily removed the applications from the Salesforce App Exchange upon discovering unauthorized activity. Great. They're actually taking responsibility for their crap. While the nature and scope of the attack have not been specified, the advisory states that certain customers' Salesforce data may have been accessed. An investigation is ongoing. All right, fair enough. I think we'll probably learn more. The next newsletter will be out just before the Thanksgiving break, and we'll hopefully learn more then. Salesforce emphasizes that they do not believe the attack stemmed from a vulnerability in the Salesforce platform, but rather from the app's external connection to Salesforce. Gainsight's status website includes brief updates on investigation of Salesforce connection failures and unusual activity that led to the revocation of access tokens for Gainsight published applications beginning on November 20th. So, just this past week. Gainsight's latest update at the time of this writing, which, by the way, would be the writing of the newsletter, notes that as a precaution, the Gainsight app has been pulled from the HubSpot marketplace as well, but no suspicious activity related to HubSpot has been observed. And I say, you know what? This is probably the best Gainsight can do right now. They don't know exactly what's happening, and they understand that Salesforce is pulling them from their systems. So pulling the app from HubSpot, which, by the way, I'm not too familiar with them, but they may be similar to others where you can, you know, work on projects and you know, retain code and all this other stuff. So, good job, guys. You're doing the best you can. I have to give you props. Researchers urge railway signaling security overhaul. David Melendez and Gabriela Garcia, founders of Tech Frontiers, are cautioning railway systems to mitigate the risk of malicious interference with legacy signaling protocols and beacons in light of vulnerabilities discovered in their research. Many rail signaling systems worldwide, including the European Train Control System, ETCS, and Spain's Anuncio de Senales y Frenado Automático, ASFA, rely on largely unsecured passive transponders called balises as one component of communicating information for safe operation. Melendez and Garcia were easily able to create a simple copycat ballast, which could have been used to halt a moving train in its tracks, issue false speed commands, or worse. The researchers also noted a lack of physical safeguards preventing existing ballasts from being disabled or maliciously retuned. Additional research addressing the security of more modern complements to the ballast system, such as digital systems involved in ETCS, will be reserved for the researchers' presentation at Black Hat 2025 due to the sensitivity of the information. The presenters will offer recommendations for mitigating these threats, including cryptographic authentication of ballast messages, anomaly detection techniques, and real-time verification of beacon authenticity. I didn't put any comments here because I'm not too familiar with this, even though I've ridden trains and I know that we've had signaling issues at times reported through our communication tools that we follow, but I really don't understand what's happening, how it works. So those who are in the know, just be aware this research is out there, and I definitely wish you good luck on finding this. It sounds like it's great research based on the comments from the newsletter, but this is beyond my expertise, but we're just going to say, great job on the research. Let's see what can be done to fix the issues you've brought up, and continue the research. This is exactly what we need. EU financial regulators designate tech providers as critical infrastructure. European financial supervisory authorities have named 19 technology companies as designated critical information and communication technology third-party providers, CTPPs, for the European Union's EU's financial sector. The EU's Digital Operation Resilience Act, DORA, which took effect in January 2025, gives the EU's European Banking Authority, EBA, European Insurance and Occupation Pensions Authority, EIOPA, and European Securities and Markets Authority, ESMA, known collectively as the ESAs, the authority to designate technology providers as critical and to supervise those entities directly. The designated technology providers include AWS, Google Cloud, and Microsoft. Although they claim there's 19, but you might as well list them all. Through direct oversight engagement, the ESAs will assess whether CTPPs have appropriate risk management and governance frameworks in place to ensure the resilience of the services they deliver to financial entities. I write, read the editor's notes, lots of info from the gang. And again, I'm not too absorbed in this. I don't know whether to think this is going to be good or bad or indifferent. I do know that this is going to be interesting. I would like to know what other companies are involved. And seeing how Europe and Google haven't gotten along in recent times, surprising they find them critical, but okay. And Amazon and their recent problems, them being critical, I don't know about that either. Microsoft outlines security risks of Windows agentic AI features. Nearly half of Microsoft's updated experimental agentic features article is devoted to underscoring the unique security risks entailed by agentic workspace and co-pilot actions. Both features are turned off by default and are only available to Windows insiders, and Microsoft recommends users only enable them if they, quote, understand the security implications. Well, of course that's what you're going to recommend, Microsoft. But you forget, you're talking about human people. I mean, we've talked about your awful idea of this recall tool, which is supposed to capture everything you ever do on a computer, and you are going to turn it on for everybody. I mean, we talked about that crap both on Sans in the early days of the podcast and on TSB. Beginning the Why Security Matters section by noting the risk of hallucination, Microsoft goes on to state that AI agents introduce novel security risks, such as cross-prompt injection, XPIA, where malicious content embedded in UI elements or documents can override agent instructions, leading to unintended actions like data exfiltration or malware installation. No, really? Three goals govern Microsoft's security controls for AI agents. Non-repudiation of an agent's actions as distinguishable from human user actions. Appropriate privacy standards for agents that handle protected user data, like Recall was ever going to do that, and human user approval of agent queries and actions. Again, I would have called Recall an agent, and it was going to record everything you ever did on a computer, whether you had a camera connected or not. So, if that was an agent, and they turned that on, well, there goes your machine. You might as well be owned now. Additionally, the article lists six security principles to consider for AI agents. 1. Agents are autonomous, vulnerable to attack, and must be properly contained. 2. Agents must produce verifiable logs. 3. Users should have a means to supervise agents' activities in detail and authorize or deny agent requests. 4. Authorized agent privileges should be granular, specific, and time-bound, operating with least privilege. 5. System access to an agent should be limited to its owner. And 6. Microsoft and Windows strive to maintain privacy and responsible AI standards. Bullshit. I call bullshit on that one. It says, Microsoft and Windows strive to maintain privacy and responsible AI standards. They can't even be responsible for their own code they ship out to us, because Nick was talking about the fact that his computer was giving him an error, and he went a month getting an error with no way to really fix it until the next month's update, let alone the constant blue screens of death that we've heard about in all of the Windows update coverage, you know, from the past few months. the recent blog post the Jared Reimer Network's Sean Everest has gone on in regards to other odds and ends and windows. Our on and on again about recall when it was the big news. I mean, how bad can they get here? They're putting AI into Windows? Now I understand Sean's 10-minute diatribe about that stupid shit. I write, read the notes from the editors. They know more about what this is doing, or what is going on than I do. And I will let you read that, because that is on their level. I haven't read any of these articles, but this is as bad as it gets. They're putting AI into Windows, and Windows is already buggy anyway, and you know damn well that people like you and I are going to find something that they find of value, and they're going to turn the thing on, and they're not even going to have a clue on what the hell is going on when they find that their system isn't doing what they expect it to do, and they won't have any idea what to turn off, if you could even turn that crap off after you turn it on anyway. CISA and international partners publish bulletproof hosting provider risk mitigations. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has released guidance for mitigating risks from bulletproof hosting providers. The document, which was published jointly with international partners in Australia, Canada, the Netherlands, New Zealand, and the UK, urges network defenders and ISPs to implement the recommendations in this guide, including, and ING is in brackets, conducting traffic analysis, curating a list of high confidence malicious internet resources, and performing automated and regular reviews of this list. I would say, just block all non-traditional TLDs that you know nothing about, or know that mainly contain hardly anything that anybody's going to go to begin with. Just solve the problem that way. As we are on page 13, it says, additionally, to further diminish the effectiveness of BPH infrastructure, ISP should take specific actions such as notifying customers about malicious internet resource lists and associated filters, creating filters that customers can apply, and establish standards and norms for ISP accountability. The U.S. Treasury and counterparts in the UK and Australia have sanctioned a Russian bulletproof hosting provider called MediaLand for its alleged support of criminal activity. They have also sanctioned data center Kirishi and ML Cloud organizations related to Media Land. And I tell you what, if that whole network is known to be fraudulent, then here's what I say. Block that network. Just block the IP range. Don't let your users go to anything that belongs to them. Be done with it. That's how you solve it. I may have made mistakes by blocking whole IP ranges, but if I see a bunch of spam coming from an IP range, I'm going to block the whole range from going to my website and bombing my contact form. Because it shouldn't be my responsibility just to block one IP to find out you're just going to switch to another IP on the same network. If you're spamming me and I see, you know, 5 in a matter of minutes and it's coming from the same block of IPs, the whole thing's going to get blocked. That cost me once when a user came to me and said that they were blocked, and I said I blocked the entire range because I was getting a whole ton of things from, you know, an IP, and maybe I should just block the IP, but so far, besides the one instance, I've been completely right. The editorial board of Sans News Bites. Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris Elgi, David Halter, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spitzner, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vautrinot, and William Hugh Murray. And there was somebody in the editors list I've not seen before whose name I'm not remembering, but he may not be a frequent contributor. But these are the editors of the newsletter. Sans Institute is located at 11200 Rockville Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. Please email support at sans.org or call 301-654-7267 for assistance if you need help with your subscription. You want to be subscribed, but you're having trouble. You can't get unsubscribed, something's not working right, what have you. Contact them and let them know what you need. This podcast is a production of the Jared Reimer Network. Again, we will be working on correcting the Braille, and we will release new Braille before we release the newsletter and the podcast as a whole, because we want to get these things corrected, we found. So please feel free and let us know what you think. You can email or iMessage jaredrimer986themix.com if you're listening through the mix, because we do play this on the independent channel. You can also email or iMessage tech, that's tech at menvi.org. You may text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. You can also call that number like Preston did. He is one of our listeners. He also has a Braille copy of the file. And he, as well as all of our Braille readers that read TSB with me, we'll be getting updates to those, to that file. I hope that everyone has enjoyed. I do want to make it known that we did make this as clean as we can. There are a few times we swore today, we're going to try and keep it that way. We're going to try and keep it at a minimum to where it's not going to be a huge deal. But if it comes too much and we get complaints, we'll make sure to check the box where people who are 12 or younger can't get at the content. I'm Jared Reimer saying thanks so much for listening. Do make it a great day. And we'll be back on another episode of the program next time. Just a programming note, there is no security box for the week of Thanksgiving. The security box will return on December 3rd, 2025. We'll continue to podcast Sans through the holiday, though. So we'll see you on another edition then. So long.